Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast. I'm Rex Nelson of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. We thank you for joining us yet again and have a delightful guest today with a fascinating story, family story, but I want to expand that story out and talk about our growing Hispanic population here in Arkansas, the future there. But Miguel Lopez joins us. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rex. Thanks for having me. Like I've always said, big fan of yours. I read your stuff religiously, so you do a great job.
Oh, well, thank you. You know the way to my heart. Miguel is at Southern Bancorp, but his family owns, if you have not been there, and I went with Miguel, Mercado El Valle, did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
At Sherwood, which is everything from a grocery store to a meat market to a bakery to a restaurant, all under one roof, right?
That's correct, yeah. We try to get offer you as many services as we can under one roof.
Yeah, sure. And we will talk about that a little more. But I want to get the background from you before we get into that. Tell me a little bit about your family's journey, your mother, your father, and how your family came to be in Arkansas, yeah, all places.
So I was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, and we had a pretty upper middle class life there. My dad was a veterinarian. And my parents never really had an intention to move to America. But in 94, the economy kind of took a turn for the worse and things started getting real dicey. So my dad, like I said, he was a veterinarian. One day he got robbed and he came home to my mom and said, you know what, that's it. We're selling everything and we're going to start anew in the United States. So we sold our house, we sold all of our belongings, and we were able to afford, you know, 6 plane tickets, 6 visas. And we landed in California, which is where most, you know, Hispanic immigrants get.
Right.
And we got there because we had relatives. But 6 months after being there, my family just didn't like it. We weren't in the best part of California. And we're actually about to move back to Mexico. And we have an aunt that lives in Sherwood, which is where I grew up, and somehow got a hold of my mom. You know, this predates Facebook and all that stuff. They just got on the phone. And my aunt said, where are you? My mom told her. She said, get over here. You'll love it. So we took a Greyhound bus from that part of California to the it's not there anymore, but the North Little Rock bus station. And Rex, I was 3, so, you know, don't quote me on this, but it felt like 4 weeks. You know, you just take 40 east all the way.
Yeah, yeah. And stop at every little town along the way on a bus. Yeah.
And I just remember, you know, you go through the desert, then you go through the plains. And when we got to Arkansas, I just thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Mm. Trees everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was green. We saw lakes. And that was the biggest break my family and I ever got in our life, because every dream we've ever had, we've been able to fulfill it right here in Arkansas.
Wow. Wow. What a great story. Now, once your parents are here, once you are settled in Arkansas, basically the store was started, I think you told me, in essence, to kind of give your mom something to do, right?
Yeah. So my mom was a stay-at-home mom all of our upbringing. She always told us, and now that I'm a parent, she's 100% right. She said, the most important job I'll ever have is being your mom.
Amen.
So she forewent her salary. And when we all got older and kind of fled the coop, she kept threatening me and my 3 siblings, hey, I think I want to get a job. And we're all like, why? You know, we're taking care of you. But what it boiled down to, Rex, is she needed something to get hot and bothered about. You know, when you raise 4 kids, it kind of keeps you on your toes.
Yep, yep.
So we pitched the idea, hey, you know, there's a growing Hispanic population, way different than when we got here. I mean, I remember when we got here in 94, you'd see somebody Hispanic and you'd be like, whoa, hey, who are you? What are you doing here? And we said, there's not a Mexican store in Sherwood. How about we start one? So it really started off kind of as a passion project. We rented a 500 square foot building and bare bones it. I mean, I remember when customers walked in, they'd say, I'm looking for the Mexican store. And we'd be like, this is it, man.
You're here. Yeah.
So we did that. And, you know, my brothers and I, we thought, man, if this thing just breaks even.
And it was how many square feet?
500 square feet.
Oh, it was tiny. Yeah.
It was tiny. Yeah. And I think we started it with about $3,000 worth of inventory.
Okay.
So nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, my brothers and I, we said, man, if this thing breaks even, we're fine. My mom, you know, has got something to do.
Selling mostly grocery products from Mexico.
Correct.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. We started there. And then, you know, fast forward 4 years, we're like, okay, we're kind of on to something. Things are starting to make, we're starting to make some money. My brother's a general contractor. My other brother was a teacher in California. And we kind of got together and said, hey, you know, with me being in banking, I think we're in a position to really do something cool. So there was a building across the street from our old store that was for sale. And it was an old Eagle Bank branch. Mm-hmm. And I said to my family, what if we buy that building and make a really big store, right? That building's 5,000 square feet. So we took a leap of faith and we bought that building and put some money into it. And now we've got a butcher shop, a bakery, and a restaurant. But I think the craziest thing about all that is, you know, what started off as a, you know, a shack is now a store that has about 12 to 14 employees, and we're doing pretty good on the sales side. So,
and it's beautiful the way you redid a bank building, even using the vault. I was so impressed. The lighting, everything. I mean, it is if a major national, and I'm being honest with you, a major national chain had done that.
Well, thank you, Ray.
It is that good looking.
My brother, he's a general contractor, so we relied heavily on his. You know, I'm the I'm the dumb banker of the family. So
yeah, we'll get into banking in a minute.
So we got the capital. And then my brother, he took his expertise. And what we really wanted to do, you know, this had our family name. And, you know, when we thought about opening a store, it probably made more sense to do it in Southwest Little Rock or any other part of town. But Sherwood is near and dear to our heart because that's the community that embraced us when we moved here. I mean, I remember one of my favorite and scariest memories as a child was when I started kindergarten at Cato Elementary. I was I didn't speak any English. You know, we were an insulated family. We spoke Spanish at the house. And my mom put me on a bus and said, all right, you're going to school today. And I just remember being scared to death. My stomach was in knots.
Absolutely.
But when I get to school the first day, the first lady I saw was Ms. Villarreal, my ESL teacher. Mm. And, you know, that's just an example of how that community has really welcomed my family. So we said, if we're going to do this anywhere, it's going to be in Sherwood because, one, they don't have one, but, two, we feel so indebted with that community for all the great stuff that they've done for us.
Yeah. And I took home some of the baked goods, which my wife just loved. I've still got to get her back out there, and she really wants to. My wife, for listeners, so they will know, Miguel knows, is Mexican-American from Texas. So she Garcia is her maiden name, so she knows the good stuff, I can assure you, and was just blown away by the bakery goods, but the meat market, I mean, we're talking really, really first class. So one of the lines I like that you used with all the grocery products is that you were kind of a tell me if I didn't get this right, but you looked at yourself as kind of a Hispanic version of Trader Joe's, if you will.
Yes, sir. That's what we modeled it. You know, there's no shortage of Mexican stores in the state, but what we wanted in our store was, you know, if a soccer mom in West Little Rock went there, she'd feel welcome, right? Somebody would greet her in English, clean floors, everything perfect where it's supposed to be. And that's kind of what we modeled, right? We wanted it to be welcoming, whether you're Hispanic or you don't, or, you know, you're not Hispanic. We wanted to be a store for everybody because what we realized is one of the best ways to connect with people is through food, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I remember as a kid, I was one of the most popular kids in my friend group because my mom cooked the best. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
We'd come home and they're like, hey, is your mom going to make enchiladas? And I'm like, sure, if that's what you want. So it was carrying that passion that we have for food in our community to help bring everybody together.
Yeah, yeah. And again, the restaurant portion, we ate lunch, but you start early in the morning and the food is available all day. Is that not correct?
Yeah, we open at 6 o'clock. And we
6 a.m.
Really to get the working crowd.
I was going to say, probably get a lot of construction workers forth.
Yeah. And then we do breakfast burritos, breakfast tacos. We get a lot of folks that stop, you know, on their way to work and, you know, whether they're white collar and they're getting a burrito and a coffee, or they're blue collar and they're filling up their, you know, their ice chest with ice and cold drinks and burritos for the guys. We really got it all.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about your brother's careers, and then we'll get into your banking career.
Yeah. But, you know, we've been entrepreneurs since we got here. I think, you know, that's the quintessential part of the American dream, right? Mm-hmm. One is just getting here. And then once you're here, you want to, you know, make something of yourself. My brother, Abraham, he's the quintessential entrepreneur. I mean, I remember when he was 13, he mowed yards.
Wow.
And
to make money.
Make money. And my mom would make tamales, and me and my brothers, we'd ride around in bikes. I'd be on the little the spokes in the back, and they'd drive me around, and we'd sell tamales.
Oh, wow.
It's really just kind of ingrained in us. So my brother, his whole life, he's been an entrepreneur. He didn't go to college. He bought a carpet cleaning van and had a carpet cleaning business when he was 19. And then he started getting home remodels and did that for a while. The reason we went into the store is my brother wanted something that you could scale. It's really hard to scale carpentry, right? Because you're the carpenter and you're the one that's got the talent. Whereas with the store, we can build one, open it and operate it, and then build a second one. And that's our hope in the next 12 to 18 months is to open a second store.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, where generally do you think that would be?
Yeah, we're really looking north. So anywhere in the Conway area, okay. There's a growing okay. Hispanic population. But, you know, it's not just the Hispanic community that shops with us. We have, you know, Anglo folks that shop with us. Again, food is universal. And that's where we're looking is probably Conway area.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get into banking?
You know, it's a great story. So I went to UALR and got my undergrad in political science and had every intention to go up to American University. That was my dream. I wanted to go to D.C.
In Washington, D.C., right.
And do the D.C. life. But right before I got a pretty sizable scholarship to American, but right before I was going to leave to D.C., I got real nostalgic about leaving Arkansas. You know, I thought to myself, man, what a jerk. Here I am finally in the prime of my life, if you will, about to contribute. I'm going to do it elsewhere, not this community that gave us so much. So when I got out of college, I got a job at the Little Rock Chamber doing economic development. I worked as a small business in the community. And what I really was I was a conduit between the chamber and the Hispanic community businesses so that they could know of all the services that the chamber provides. And I love that. And I got into banking. One day there was a bank coming into Little Rock and they, you know, I was driving around with them explaining the opportunities for Little Rock as a new bank. And then they started asking me about the Hispanic population. And they said, well, how do we get the Hispanic community to bank with us? And I told the representatives of the bank, I said, you really need to hire someone that's from the community, that can connect with them, that can help you establish that trust with the community. And I said, why don't we hire you? And, you know, I joked and I said, the only qualification I have to be a banker is that I've had a checking account for most of my life. But they said, that's why you'd be such a good banker, because you're not set in your ways. We could mend you. So that's how my career in banking started. And since then, I've really kind of helped create a niche for myself in helping financial institutions grow their balance sheet and their portfolio by serving the Hispanic population. Because a lot of people don't know this, but Arkansas has the fourth fastest growing demographic of Hispanics in
wow,
the nation.
Really? Fourth in the country?
Yeah. And a lot of that is, you know, the industry, right? If you look at South Arkansas, Hispanics are working the farms in South Arkansas. In Central Arkansas, we're working construction and manufacturing jobs. And then in North Arkansas, you've got the poultry plants with,
right.
You know, the Tysons and the Simmons of the world up there. But, you know, and to our credit, we're the only state in the South, knock on wood, that hasn't passed any anti-immigrant legislation. Mm-hmm. And that's been to our benefit, because we've had folks move here to want to take those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And those jobs are just so important. How do you, as a banker, talk about how you reach out to that Hispanic community, how you provide capital that people like your family, you're trying to start stores and expand stores. I know that a lot of it has to be building trust, because people, whether they're taking out a loan, whatever they're doing, they've got to trust the person they're working with. Yeah. So I know that's a key part of what you do is build trust with people.
Yeah. You know what? The reason I'm so passionate about my career is that it's a lot of what I do is who I am. Right. And if you look at my family story, you know, it doesn't happen without a financial institution that takes a chance on us, that gives us a loan to buy a bank building, that gives us another loan to repurpose the building. And, you know, that's the quintessential American dream is, you know, I asked my mom when we were starting the business, I said, are you scared? You know, this is scary stuff, you know, taking $1 million loan. And my mom said, scared? I moved my whole family to a country where I didn't speak the language. That was scary. Opening a business was just that next part of the American dream. But going back to how we do it and why it's so important, the Hispanic community, they're so entrepreneurial, they're growing. The challenge is, how do banks connect with the Hispanic community, right? And, you know, my banker friends will say, well, Hispanics don't trust banks. They don't want to bank with us. And then in the Hispanic community, they'll say, well, banks don't lend to us. And they're both right. The challenge is, you need someone in the middle, much like myself, that can marry those two together and say, hey, Mr. Banker, here's why they don't bank with you. Nobody in your branch speaks Spanish. You don't have the products to serve this community. You're not in their neighborhoods like you should be. But then on the other side of that, you need someone that can go to the Hispanic community and say, here's why the bank won't lend you money, right? You don't have a credit score, right? Or you don't have the down payment, or you're not showing a profit on your tax returns, because you're self-employed. You need someone that can lead that strategy for both the bank, but also go out in the community and pitch to them the work that you're doing to serve that community.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see where doing that and making that pitch probably need a lot more like you out there in the banking community and other banking communities. So we have this fourth fastest growing Hispanic community in the country, fourth largest, as you said, or fastest growing. Where do you see this going the next 5 years, the next 10 years? Do you see a continuation of that? And do you see that Hispanic community becoming really more of an ingrained part of the Arkansas culture as we go on?
Definitely. You know, Rex, when we moved here, we were few and far between.
Absolutely.
And growing up as an immigrant in Arkansas, you almost kind of felt invisible, right? No one ever talked about the Latino community, whether it's banking, politics. Where we've done a great job since I've been here, I can say, is the public education system. I mean, the fact that I had an ESL teacher just for me when I was growing up was serendipitous. But as we get larger in quantity, I think it's going to be one of two things. The organizations that don't take us into consideration are going to do it to their detriment because they're going to lose out. Let's take the banking example, right? There's Southern Bancorp is doing great work in the Hispanic community, but so are some other great Arkansas banks. And that's great. As my old football coach used to say, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? Mm-hmm. But we also realize that the Hispanic population is growing so much that it's changing the face of Arkansas.
Absolutely.
But for the benefit of the state, right? I mean, just last night, not to get into politics too much, but for the first time ever, we're going to have a Latina that represents Arkansans at the state house with Representative Diana Warden. So you're going to start seeing those changes there. But what I think folks need to understand is the Hispanic community is not a monolith, right? And we talk about politics again. There is no Latino vote. What there are is Latino voters. And, you know, as you can see from the data, we swing in any direction. It just really depends on who is more intentional with our community and who's going to serve us the best.
You know, and this growing Hispanic community has really revitalized communities, downtowns. I travel Arkansas a lot. That's what I do for a living. And I can go to a place like a Danville in the Arkansas River Valley or a Green Forest in far north Arkansas, where the downtown was full of empty buildings 10 years ago. And now those buildings are full and they are vibrant again. And those are Latino-created businesses.
Yes. Well, and if they're not Latino-created, they were built by Latino. You know, I mean, you know, you look at West Little Rock and all the houses being built out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who's building them? Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, one thing that's really – I've been to all 75 counties. I've had various jobs, and I like to eat. So one of the things that I've noticed –
we've got that in common.
All 75 counties have a Hispanic restaurant in there.
Wow.
And you think, well, if there's somebody at that restaurant, someone Latino started it and or works it.
Yeah.
And again, it's a growing size of the population that I hope the business community, the political community, the banking community, they'll start to realize, hey, really not to realize, but ask themselves, what are we doing to serve that community? And if the answer is nothing, they need to start working at that. Because again, if they're not, their competitors are, and it's going to be to their disadvantage.
Yeah. Let's talk about the political community a little bit. How do you get this growing population more engaged in Arkansas politics? Because obviously it's in their self-interest to vote. It's in their self-interest to be on everything from school boards to county quorum courts to city councils on up to the legislature. And I know that's not a fast process, but as somebody who majored in political science and has a real interest in politics, how do we get that community more engaged?
Yeah, I think both parties need to create a Latino strategy. And, you know, the easiest way to do that is to have candidates that are from the community that are Latino that get folks excited about voting for the first time. Mm-hmm. If you look at what happened in Northwest Arkansas, the reason Representative Diana won is because she's been in that community a long time and folks know her. And kudos to the Democratic Party to fielding her as a candidate and throwing some resources behind her. The Republican Party should do the same. I think, you know, as someone that's been in Arkansas politics, I think from the Democrat side is they just assume that Latinos are going to vote Democratic. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not. If they don't have a candidate that they can get excited about, if you don't have the get out the vote efforts. And on the Republican side, because they assume they're going to vote Democratic, it's like, well, we don't need them, right? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do for them? But if you look at the most recent data from this morning, President Trump increased his margin with Latinos 15%.
Absolutely. I was looking at that earlier this morning.
And in fact, he did better than George. In 2004, when George Bush got 45% of the Latino vote, people thought that was incredible. Mm-hmm. President Trump just did way better than that in the Latino vote.
Right. So they are not. That is not a one-party voting block. And I think you are dead on. It is incumbent on both parties here in Arkansas to reach out to that growing community.
Yeah, and the reality is it's issues-based, right? If you ask the number one reason why Latinos voted, it was the economy. Mm-hmm. And right, wrong, or indifferent.
Inflation and high prices, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, and I hope that's something that both parties seriously take a strong look at. If you look at DeQueen, it's majority Hispanic, right?
Right, right.
Both Republican and Democrats should look at that district and say, how can we have a Latino candidate? Or how can we energize the Latinos to vote in that district? And, you know, going back, if you look at the data about the declining population, there's a direct correlation in Arkansas communities that have a declining population and versus the ones that don't have a Hispanic population, mm-hmm. right? Central Arkansas, Northwest Arkansas, Jonesboro, those are areas where we're seeing population increases, right? What's driving a lot of that is the Hispanic population moving there and taking those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Back in August, I spoke to the DeQueen Rotary Club, and one thing that I took as a very good sign was the number of Latino members of that club. They were inducting a couple of new ones, whereas, and I've spoken to that club on and off for years, not that many years ago, like a lot of Arkansas cities, the Hispanic community was really segregated mm-hmm. and in its own area of town, didn't get involved. And that Rotary Club showed me an example of we're seeing more and more of plugging into what I call everyday Arkansas life yeah. now.
You know what's driving that, Rex, is if you have to think the Hispanic population in Arkansas is 70% first generation.
Right.
Those are folks like my parents that moved here. But that was 30 years ago. As we, as a population, get older, you're going to start to see second and third generations. Mm-hmm. And those are folks that, yeah, they speak Spanish at home, but they speak English just like myself, right?
Yeah.
And they're interweaving themselves in the broadcloth of America and in the state. You know, like, for example, where your wife's from, folks are 8th, 9th, 10th generation
Americans. Absolutely. Her family goes back hundreds of years. They say, we didn't immigrate. The countries just kept changing on us. You know, we were part of Spain. Then we were part of Mexico.
Yeah.
Then we were the Texas Republic. We were the U.S.
And that's what's happening is, now I'm having kids. My friends are having kids. I'm growing up. We're, and the example that I always give is you got to think of the color blue, right? The color blue is both green and yellow combined. When you look at myself, I'm American, right?
Yeah.
But I'm also yellow and I'm green. I'm Hispanic and I'm American. You can be both. It's not one or the other. And what you're seeing in communities like DeQueen, those are folks that have been there for 20, 30 years. Their kids are getting public education jobs. They're becoming lawyers. They're becoming doctors. They're becoming state representatives. And the more that happens, the more ingrained we're going to be in the fabric of America versus before when you first get here as an immigrant, it's, hey, you're going to hang out with people that speak Spanish because you don't know English and you're going to work with them. And we kind of self-ostracize. But as the communities mature, they weave themselves in the fabric of Arkansas. And I think it's important for all the state's leaders to realize that, especially if you live in DeQueen, if you live in Central Arkansas, Northeast and Northwest, which is where the highest concentration of Hispanics are.
I'll give you one funny example you'll like of that. One of my wife's favorite things is we try out different Mexican restaurants. Traveling around the state, you'll have a waitress, clearly Hispanic, come wait on you, young girl, and Melissa will get so tickled. She'll say that beautiful little Mexican American girl with a pure Arkansas accent. Because she'll say, "What y'all need?"
Oh yeah, I see that all the time.
And that's born and raised in Arkansas now. That's that new generation you're talking about.
I have cousins that live in Minnesota.
Well, so y'all's, dropping it.
Yeah, I have cousins that live in Minnesota. We go visit them. They're like, "Can you say y'all again?" And I'm like, "That's just how we were raised."
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I take it because it appears to me, and obviously there have been huge obstacles, but through hard work, your family certainly has achieved that American dream. You know, here in Arkansas, we call ourselves the natural state now, but we once called ourselves the land of opportunity. And I tend to like that old motto for the state. Going forward, where you see the landscape now, you see Arkansas being a true land of opportunity for additional Hispanic residents who come here and choose to make it their home like your family did?
Yeah, without question. I tell people any chance I get. I travel a lot for work, and when they find out that I'm in Arkansas, I say, what are you doing there, right? What's that like? And I tell people this all the time. Arkansas is America's best kept secret, and sometimes we do a good job of keeping it that way. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, my family story would have been drastically different if we would have stayed in California or if we had immigrated to another major city like Chicago or New York. We wouldn't have the great education that we had, but also the ability to start a business in Arkansas is so cheap compared to other states. You know, if you look at my family's example, we got here, we didn't have two nickels to rub together. We really had burned the boats, as they say, mm-hmm. We were going to make this happen. We were able to start a business, and my folks, when we started the business, it was risky, right?
Yeah.
But the Arkansas business climate is so favorable that a family like ours can come here with no money, start a business. And as of January of this year, my family, my mom and dad, they retired and they live on the beach in Mexico.
Wow.
And I think about that, not to be braggadocious, but it's the reality that, you know, a lot of folks are struggling in America right now, and it's really hard to get down on us. But at the end of the day, my family story doesn't happen in any other country in the world but the United States. Now, what does that entail? You've got to work hard. You've got to be committed to what you're doing. And you've got to pay by the rules. And I think that's what my family's been able to do. And that's what we're able to be successful.
Great. Miguel, thank you so much for joining me. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, just as I thoroughly enjoyed going out to Sherwood and having lunch with you. We'll stay in touch, and I think you have really enlightened a lot of our listeners who might not realize all that's going on with that growing Hispanic population here in Arkansas. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for what you do, Rex.
I'm Rex Nelson of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You've been listening to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast.